taking a break and coming to feast here this evening on God's Word. We're going to be in Isaiah 56. I have not been attending the class, so I'm going to depend on y'all for context and all the lesson. I'll do the reading, though, and then I'll just throw it out there and y'all can connect the dots. I believe, at least according to the notes, that y'all covered the first 8 verses. And so the plan will be to start in verse 9. I'll read through verse 12. And we'll just take this section by section. I have a few notes. I can get us going. But Jeff said, and he really sold, that y'all are going to do all the talking. And I just get to stay up here. Isaiah 56, beginning verse 9. It says, "All you beasts of the field, all you beasts in the forest, come to eat. His watchmen are blind. All of them know nothing. All of them are mute dogs, unable to bark, dreamers lying down who love to slumber. And the dogs are greedy, and they are not satisfied. And they are shepherds who are not understanding. They have all turned to their own way, each one to his unjust gain, to the last one. Come, they say, let us get wine, and let us drink heavily of strong drink, and tomorrow we will be like today, only more so." According to the notes that Jeff gave me, so if y'all got any questions, I'll be sure to text him. He'll get back to you probably later. This is talking about the ruling class. And particularly, he focuses on their inability to lead, or at least their very poor leadership. He refers to them as different types of beasts, dogs especially, and he talks about how the watchmen are blind, which is unfortunate for a leadership class. That's probably the number one thing leaders are supposed to do, is keep watch. Matter of fact, they're the one that's supposed to point the direction. They're the ones that are supposed to have vision. No matter what line of work you're in, I'm sure you've heard lots about vision. That seems to be a very big buzz theme in just about every vocation that you're in. I'm a teacher by trade. I've worked K-12. I've heard a lot about vision in every field that I've been in. And I know anytime I look it up, business leaders all over are selling their vision, right? But look at their vision. They're blind. Tragic. Of all the people in the whole world, they should have had a vision. And matter of fact, Isaiah's there to give them a vision, but it's not a good one. I assume now that y'all have gone through 56 chapters, y'all know this is not a happy book. At least, not for the people of Israel. They look forward to happier times, and we'll get to some of those in a few verses. But with leadership like this, how could there be a happy vision? Well, I thought I heard a comment.
Yeah. The backside of verse 10 and into verse 11 are interesting, especially now that I have a puppy.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. They're dogs, but they can't bark. They sleep all the time. They eat all the time and never... Like, if you're a dog, especially then, you have one job. Your one job is to be a guard dog, to be moving and patrolling and alerting to what's going on, and they are doing everything but.
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, I had a little bit different reaction in the beginning because I'm not a dog person, so I thought, man, a dog that doesn't bark, perfect.
And just sleep.
But obviously these dogs had purpose. They weren't probably this big and fluffy. They were probably bigger and should have been biting people, right? At least alerting. Kind of moving in with that idea, kind of get a vision of me in the middle of verse 11. And they are shepherds who have no understanding. I can't imagine what it's like to be a shepherd. If anybody put me in charge of their sheep, it's just going to be a miracle if any of them survive the night. I can't imagine being these people, given the history that they have up to this point, of all the visions, the miracles, the things that have happened. And I know some of it is just a modern perspective, because when I read it, I go chapter to chapter and I get vision after vision after vision, and I don't understand the years that may have passed or how regional some of these visions are. It's probably not until I met Jeff that I realized that not every prophet prophesied to every single person. When I read Israelites, I think you just covered everybody. They just passed the scrolls around and everybody got to read. But some of those prophets were very local. You know, they dealt with the Philistines in the south, or they dealt with, you know, the Moabites, you know, to the southeast, or whatever they might have been dealing with. And so I know some of it is just me projecting a lot on them, that most of these people may not have ever come in contact with Isaiah. They may have heard word from this person to that person, but God communicated to his people. They knew the condition, or should have known the condition, especially the leadership. The everyday common man, maybe they didn't know. You know, they just had their nose to the ground. They're just trying to make sure they can eat tonight, eat tomorrow, eat in the winter. So God's as a little more lenient, as it were, on a lot of these people. But in verses 9 through 12, you see his perspective on the leadership.
Jeremy?
Yes.
I kind of like to look at verse 11, first half of that verse, where it says, the dogs have a mighty appetite and they never have enough. And I, when I read that, it just kind of struck me. If you've ever talked with some folks that are very wealthy, the money isn't the thing anymore. Money is the measuring stick. You know, they have so much that it just tells, the money is just tells them how well are they now performing, doing whatever. And it kind of reminded me of that scenario. These people had gotten so wealthy that, you know, there wasn't really a need for them to get up and go to work tomorrow. They were doing it because it was just see how much more can I get.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of folks in our societies today around the world who kind of look at it that way. It's not about just going and working hard day by day to support your family. It's how much more can I get.
Yeah. Never satisfied.
Never satisfied.
A question Jeff has here for us to consider. It says, what do blind watchmen in spiritual leadership, think about our context in the church, preachers, elders, husbands, fathers, it doesn't have to be a formal position, but those who God's given a charge to, what would a blind leadership today look like?
You look at the thousands of religions in the world today,
yeah,
and you see blind leadership. I mean, the Bible means nothing to them, or very little.
Right.
And
it reminds me there in the second half of the verse Randy was mentioning, they've each turned to their own way. You know, if you don't like this, well, just go start your other church. You know, it costs almost nothing to start a website now, and then you can just put yourself on the Google box, and people come to you. And if they pay you money, man, you're really into it.
I don't know if he was the first to do this or not, but the Church of England was started by the king who wanted a divorce, and the Catholic Church didn't want him to have a divorce.
Yeah.
I think
Blind
remember reading in John where it talks about Jesus being the chief shepherd, and he's at the door, and he's the doorkeeper, and anyone that comes in to come unto him has to come through him through the door to get to God. But if anyone comes any other way, they are a thief and a robber.
Yeah.
So there are plenty of those that are perpetrating salvation without going through the chief shepherd.
Amen. There's broad is the way, narrow it, or broad is the way that leads to destruction, narrow is the way that leads to salvation. And y'all are both certainly right in that aspect, that lots of people are selling a way to heaven that doesn't get there. I saw someone scratch. I thought someone was raising their hand.
I see a lot of self-interest in this passage, too, and I think that's a danger to watch for in our spiritual leaders, is what what do they gain from teaching this particular message?
Right.
And how does that compare to the whole testimony?
Yeah.
And watching for that, because it may not always be financial. It might be influence or something like that.
Yeah.
But the self-interest as opposed to putting others first.
And Jesus basically tells us, those who put themselves first will be last, and the last will be first. Yes, sir?
In the context of blind, in the Isaiah we're reading,
mm-hmm.
is this blind by ignorance?
Yeah.
Or is it blind because of refusing to accept the truth, like in Romans chapter 1,
yeah.
when Paul describes people refusing to believe the truth, and he goes on and talks about, you know,
gave them up to the different things.
Right. What's blind?
My opinion would be the latter. It would be the second. I think that's why he comes down on them so hard. But I don't think it's necessarily that they couldn't quote scripture. I think it was that they neglected fundamental God truth. You know, it'll go on further about how they neglected to protect the pure and the innocent. You know, he talks a lot in Isaiah about neglecting children and widows and the foreigner. He spends a lot of time talking about the foreigner. And so my understanding is that it was willful ignorance, probably because of what was mentioned, their own self-interest. You know, why would I give up this money to help this person when I could keep it all myself?
And are we talking about the rich or the leaders? Or is that the same?
Both. At some points, he'll separate them.
Okay.
Sometimes he'll talk about, and I don't want to get too French about this, but you got all these classes, right? And so the French separated them into three classes, if I understand. Everyone has heard the bougie. That's a reference to the bourgeoisie. You got that top class. I think that's who he's sitting at here, whether they were rich or just happened to be leaders. But later he separates them out. He definitely talks about the priests in sections, which in God's eyes, those are the leaders there in Israel. And then later you get to the market class, you know, the people who are buying and selling. But I think in this context, it's the rich, wealthy class. To drive it home a little bit more, I don't know how many, I know we've got several visitors. I don't know everyone's background, but for those who don't know, I grew up in East Texas. And I know growing up what this looked like was that most of the churches were very small. They were probably 90% women. And there was no elders. Maybe there was a preacher. Okay? So for a generation, maybe two or three generations, there was a lot of blind leadership. There was a surge of when people were baptized and people got in the pews. But after a while, it just became, this is what I did. I used to be, you know, whatever they formerly were, Baptist, Pentecostal, you know, whatever class they might have hit. But now I'm Church of Christ. And then that didn't really carry over to the kids. And then you had me growing up. And, you know, I was sitting there, and I had a brother, I had two sisters, and I had a cousin. And that was it. Everybody else was my parents' age, which probably brought the average down by 20 or 30 years. And then there were my grandparents. When I was starting to preach, and I was going through my training, it was so easy to find places to preach because people were just sitting in pews waiting for someone to come preach to them. And so I did a circuit, and I probably preached 3 or 4 times a Sunday. I moved off to Florida, came back. There was a church just waiting. And so I said, hey, I'll do it. And they said, sure. Thankfully, I knew some people that could vouch for me, you know, kind of like those letters they used to send around. So I wasn't completely blind, but I was 25. That's pretty blind a lot of times. Yeah, my brain, right? Fully developed 24, 25, is that right? So imagine, you know, those situations. I think about our immediate context here at Klangwood. I'm very thankful for our elders. And so don't take this as a comment to them, but hypothetically think, if our leadership were to get blind, what would that look like? There would be less preaching on controversial topics. Okay. We want the people in, so don't run anybody off. You know, there'd be more emphasis a lot of times in a lot of places, and there's emphasis on projects. Sometimes they're called ministries. And the emphasis is, we need this money, we need your donations, so that we can do X, Y, and Z. There's not a lot of connection to, you know, the meat. There's not a lot of connection to this. And there's not a lot of personal responsibility sent back to you. Blind leaders are more than willing to take it all on. Yeah, let us do it. You just sit there, keep the money flowing, and we'll kind of direct where it goes. We'll make it easy on you. To me, that's what we were talking about, all the different churches out there. That's what people want. They want to sit. They want to have their, you know, their membership card, or, you know, that they can say, oh, I go over to name the place, and have a sense of community without the responsibility. And what God wants is for us to be responsible and form a community.
Well, I think it's also more opinion-based versus paying attention to the pattern.
Yeah.
And looking at the pattern and basing decisions on that versus...
Yeah.
You know, oh, this sounds good, or I think, or I want.
And it comes down to discipline, right? Any profession that you're in, there is a discipline. There's guidelines, there's ways to say, yes, you are in, and no, you are out. It's the same with being a Christian. And that's hard to sell to people, and that's hard to tell people who are looking to just kind of hang back, you know, just go off of their opinions instead of the pattern, like you said. Because discipline is hard. There's no autopilot Christianity. There's no autopilot discipline. It's a constant, conscious effort. Emphasis on the effort. No one's going to be perfect at it, and that's not what God was expecting them either. But He did expect them to try. Yes, ma'am. And then we'll go back.
Yeah, you mentioned people are focusing on the project and the monetary, and it's true. And it's not, I don't think it's a lot of ease sitting in some of the congregations, such as the large, huge congregations,
yeah,
where you're pressured to give a certain amount and you're told what to give.
Yeah.
I was working with a young lady and talking with her, and she said she was a church here in Houston where she was going as a member, and they asked her to submit her pay stub, and
right,
and they reviewed it.
That's
and,
pretty direct.
Yeah, so, and then they called her home and told her, you're not giving enough.
Oh.
Literally.
Did they connect it to a tithe, or was it just, we need you to give more?
The amount they want her to give.
Mm-hmm.
Pay stub, and they said, you're not giving enough. And
interesting.
So she stopped going there. I said, that's not biblical.
Right.
And so it's, you know, you don't get lost in the crowd. They single you out, and you get the pressure to give. But they have projects and things that they want to meet, and their agendas, their dollar, their goal.
My guess is they're connected to even a bigger hierarchy than even that local group. Because my exposure, and it's very limited, has been most groups that call themselves churches run themselves like a nonprofit. You know, they want you to subscribe, and then honestly, it would be great if you just forget that you were subscribed and they would just bill you monthly or weekly or however it works. You know, almost like a gym membership in November, right? Oh, I'm sorry. Just me, I guess. And churches would be happy to do that. But that's interesting that church is that direct. Interesting. Oh, and then the
back. One of my recent most favorite verses, Philippians 2:12, wherefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling.
Yeah.
Call to individual responsibility.
Yeah.
And it is true that our elders, preacher, teachers, they are, in a sense, our leaders.
Yeah.
And we look to them for direction, but we are individually responsible for the direction that we go.
Yeah.
And it appears this is kind of a an eye-opener to the possibility of leaders who are not worthy.
Yeah. I mean, Philippians 2 is a great reference to kind of flipping the script to what's here. You know, it reminds me of Galatians 6, where in some places it's saying you're even responsible to help other people and their burdens. And then it turns it back and says each person is going to be responsible for their own burden. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, be careful, what you sow will be what you reap. And I think that goes double for leaders. Any other thoughts?
Yeah. Just real quick. Let's all keep in mind also that all of these schemes that get played, this is the devil working here. Yeah. This is Satan doing this. You go back to the 50s when it was the institutional question. Send us your money and we'll make sure these things get, you know, that was then. Now it's, you're not paying us. Okay? I mean, the churches are getting more direct and more, I want your money. I don't really care what we're doing to make sure you get to heaven. As long as you provide me your money, then we're all good. And this is Satan doing his thing, you know? And so many people walk into it and say, well, yeah, this is the best worship I've ever seen. And it's like, well, you were just entertained. You didn't worship, you were entertained.
Yeah.
And that's the scary part of what's going on.
Yeah. And the people want it, so.
Yep.
Give the people what they want.
And that's what they do. And that's why people say, I'm sorry, my gift was so low. Alright, I think you had one other thing. Well, I think we've already covered it. It says, how does verse 10 translate to modern culture? How does it capture the mindset of those who are frustrated by the limits and failures, sufferings of life, but still don't turn to God? There are a lot of answers out there, and all of them but one are wrong. But, man, if you accept the truth, you've got to accept all the other stuff that comes with it. You got to let go. And, man, people do not like to be told they have to do without. And I throw me in there, too. And it starts early, I'll tell y'all. I'm a behavior coach. I work in an elementary campus, for those that may not have heard. And my sole job is basically to help kids understand their limits and to talk with adults to help them understand their limits. And then I connect the two and help them understand how they can respect each other's limits. And that's what I do all day, every day. And it is not an easy job. Because whether you're talking adults or kids, neither of them like to hear the limits to that. I have a 4-year-old. He tests my limits all the time. And I try to enforce his limits best I can. Next section is just two verses. Isaiah 57, verse 1 and 2. The righteous man perishes, and no man takes it to heart. And devout men are taken away, while no one understands. For the righteous man is taken away from evil. He enters into peace. They rest in their beds, each one who walked in his upright way. I'm going to get through this part without crying. That's my goal. We've been hit really hard recently, I think, in these set of verses. We've lost some people that were our spiritual leaders. And I'm here to say I don't think the season is over. And as long as we're here on earth, it's never going to be over. But you see God's perspective when he looks at this. He's disheartened that there aren't more people paying attention, but he's going to take care of his people. So this is him again continuing to address that the evil leadership, but I see a bit of hope for those who walk the path of righteousness. In verse 2, you know, he enters into peace. they rest in their beds. So you see the difference there. Each one's going to get a rest. Where do you want it? What kind of rest do you want? Reminds me a lot of Hebrews 4. That God has prepared a rest. That if the rest had existed on earth, there would be no reason to move on. But that rest, is set in the future. And so.
Yes.
James. Yes, ma'am.
If the leaders were leading and teaching, then when the ones that were leading and teaching have passed, these others will step in. If they've been taught and if they have put it into practice and are ready, and that's what everyone has to do, is to be ready so that they can take a leadership that's scriptural.
Absolutely. And that's the design. Paul told Timothy to commit these things to faithful men. The pattern.
We've just refilled the eldership with those that had to step down because of ill health. So that's the natural progression.
Yeah.
And if we're not attaining that, everybody, if we're not attaining that, then we're not where we're supposed to be.
Yeah.
I mean, with God.
And this might be kind of more telling of me. Not that long ago, I looked at becoming an elder at the age of 60, 70, and continuing on. It seemed like a pretty long time, right? And I'm not saying 60 and 70 is the only age that you can become an elder. Just young Jeremy was stupid, and that's what we call it. But on that side of my age, I looked out and I thought, 20, 30 years, 40 years, that's a pretty good run for leadership. It wasn't until recently whenever, I'm a little older, and I've gotten to know a number of our elders really well, and then to see elders who I'm close with, like Robert Ray and others, and it makes me, like you were saying, leaders, grow other leaders to take their spot. That seems like an awfully tight window right now. It seems like, becoming an elder in my mind doesn't last as long as I used to think it did. And it makes people in my position who aren't old enough yet, or not qualified yet, I'll say, it seems to put the pressure that we need to get there. Whatever category, especially the men, the husbands, the grandfathers, even streaming online. If we're not preparing ourselves to be elders, what are we doing?
Yeah, just to add a couple of those comments too, because this is really an important thing that I've spent a lot of time thinking about over the last couple of years, really. If you look at our society and the world that we live in, if you look at what they're doing, they're reaching further down in age to try to indoctrinate children into a certain way of thinking.
Yeah.
And as I've been contemplating that, I started asking myself, well, what are we doing to train boys and girls at that age that they were created by mistake, that they really are boys and girls, and there is a purpose that God has for them to grow up and be good Christians, husbands and wives, deacons, preachers, elders, elders' wives, deacons' wives, preachers' wives. We need all of those people to keep this church moving forward and doing what God wants us to do. And I'm worried that we're not reaching far enough down to set the expectations of the boys and girls of where they need to be when they get to the ripe old age of this old guy of 64, 65 years. Are they going to be ready to step in when it's time for me to step out? And I'm really concerned about that, because I'm concerned because I'm not saying we're doing a bad job or we're doing anything wrong, but Satan is getting really aggressive with 5-year-olds Are we getting as just as aggressive with 5-year-old to make sure that they're grounded in the faith? I don't know. I think we need to think about that some. Just my opinion.
As an elder, I think you can deliver. What it brings to my mind is sometimes we glorify the opposite of what we need to glorify. You think about the honor he's expecting men and women who are passing to have, that he's calling out the leadership for not noticing that these righteous people are dying. I think about the ways that like eldership is described and preachers are described and women like Dorcas and, you know, we could go on and on with the people that God describes as close to him and worthy of honor. And then just take a moment and reflect, who do we glorify? I mean, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands because I would have to raise mine as well. But who's all caught up on Travis, Kelsey, and Taylor Swift? She wasn't at the game against the Chiefs and the Philadelphia Eagles. Why do I know that? You know, but, you know, what are the lives of the righteous people around me? Who am I connecting with? My sister Hal mentioned that's going to help me grow. You know, those who are in position to help others grow. You know, 1 Timothy 5 says, older women train the younger women. Older men train the younger men. Who are we connecting with?
Jeff likes to talk a lot about order and purpose in creation and in the way God has structured things. And I see that both in what Randy was saying, but also in these first two verses. It's right. You know, we struggle and we grieve and we suffer when the righteous are taken to their peace. But that's how it's supposed to go. And we are supposed to use that as an opportunity to say, oh yeah, that's what I'm supposed to be doing, and reorient our purpose and our mission-oriented thinking. But when you have blind leaders, when you have people not paying attention, you miss those reminders to recenter.
Yeah. And to go along with that, something I was thinking of as I read these and I think about those we've lost, I think some of the reason we may not notice or pay as much attention is honestly death is not that abrupt right now. I mean, some people have died quickly, so I don't want to discount that. But I think about, and I, you know, those who are older, you know, sometimes it goes and it goes and it goes. I mean, anyone who's visited Les Hodges in the last 20 years probably knows he's ready. And he's been ready a long time. And I think about how quickly it might have been in the past, but he's still here, his mind's still with him. And I think sometimes it blunts kind of the loss. You know, we've been preparing for you know, those who are older to die. Sometimes it goes and it goes and it goes. We should take that as an opportunity. We should take it as a chance to visit and to connect. I hit that word over and over and over again because I'm preparing for my Sunday morning class next quarter. Here's a shameless plug. Growing in the fruits of the Spirit. And one of the emphases is going to be connection. Because I think a lot of us are missing that, myself included. Who are we connecting with? The opportunities are out there. We just have to be assertive. We have to plug ourselves in.
I don't know just exactly how we can do this. Excuse me. But some way that the reward does not get built in. And I'm not saying that very well, but
I think
we don't the preaching and in some cases the teaching dwells on, you know, this person or that person, but they don't, we don't say, we don't dwell on the end prize.
Right.
And, you know, and leave that up to the preacher. We try to.
Yeah. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, it's almost like heaven becomes just kind of a hollow shell that we know it's there, and it sounds like a really nice place. I'd much rather go there than hell. But, man, things around here are pretty nice.
Yeah. But they're going to always be here.
Right. You know, I'll just keep going, and then one day I'll be in heaven. And what makes me think, again, kind of, you know, the way Satan has twisted things around us, when we think of heaven, I mean, what do we think? You know, for some people, when I talk to them about heaven, they're like, oh, brother so-and-so passed, he's up there in heaven playing golf. You know, boy, I sure hope heaven isn't golf. How frustrating. and expensive, I mean, not to discount any of you golfers, please don't meet me after class. Or sometimes we make heaven earth, and we make earth heaven. We flip it, which is why I don't think we'll get into it. At least I hope we don't, because I want to see Jeff cover the rest of this. He moves in to this discussion further into the chapter about idolatry, and essentially that's what it is. We're putting this world in the place of God. So even when we think about God, he looks a lot more like us than us trying to look more like him. Or when we think about our relationships, we want our relationships to look like all those people we wish we were like. And so we create that into the people that are around us, instead of looking to those who obviously have it pretty well figured out and trying to make ourselves more like them. Again, I think we're missing a lot of opportunities out there. I was wiping your eyes in my preview.
Yeah,
I almost called out your
arm. People tend to mix carnal things with spiritual things, as you were stating.
Yeah.
They want to put it all in the same pot, same bowl. You know, it's all together. But it's totally separate.
Yeah.
The carnal has nothing to do with the spirit.
Well, and you think about the influence between the two. Spiritual has way more power, you know, way more ability than the physical does.
Well, that's when you try to make it all right.
Right.
And acceptable.
You know, I don't know how many of y'all have read through Daniel recently. You read that back half of Daniel, and you get this, like the veil gets pulled back for a minute, and these angels are fighting each other and doing all these things, and I'm saying, close the veil. I don't need to know. The spiritual world is all around us. You know, the allusions to Satan and the war he's fighting, I mean, it's real, and it's around us, and we are active participants, whether you meant to be or not. I hope we're choosing the right side.
Every time something horrible happens in life, I always think, you know, and you get through it, you know, I always think, how hard were the angels fighting? How hard was God fighting for me to have gotten through this?
Yeah.
If you ever had a bad car accident, or if you've ever lost somebody really close, and you get through it, the angels are fighting, and God is fighting for you.
Yeah, I mean, I like Mordecai? With Esther? Mm-hmm. Is that the right name?
Yes.
Right. Nailed it. I like his perspective, where he said, perhaps, you know, this is this or that.
Well, and you know our answer.
Yeah.
If I die, I die.
Yeah. Here we go.
That, to me, that's more important than what he said, you know, in some ways.
Right.
In some ways.
You know, Hebrews 1 and 14 talks about that, where the angels are sent to minister to those that will be saved.
Yeah. Well, I feel a sense of accomplishment. I don't know about y'all. We covered 7 verses. So we'll see how Jeff covers the next 9 chapters next week. I appreciate everyone's thoughts and comments very much. Thank y'all for letting me teach.
Thank you.